Hi, and welcome to another Cyber Podcast episode. I'm your host, Christoph Limpelaer, and in this episode, Daniel Miesler joins us to talk about how security assessments often get confused and misused. So we're going to talk about vulnerability assessments versus pen tests versus bug bounties versus red team engagements. We'll also talk about his current role and career advice for those who are interested in pursuing a cybersecurity role that's related to security assessments. Now, Daniel has a tremendous amount of experience in the security industry. Currently, he is the head of vulnerability management at a financial services company. Before that, he was the head of business intelligence, information security at Apple, where he managed the team that measures the effectiveness of security efforts at Apple. And he's also been a project leader for the OWASP Mobile Top 10 and the OWASP IoT Security Projects, just to name some of his latest roles. So I'm really excited to have him on the show. And Daniel, thank you so much for joining us today. It's great to have you here. All right, so before I get into the nitty-gritty details, I have to ask you, how in the world do you measure the effectiveness of security efforts at Apple? I mean, that sounds like a pretty massive undertaking and responsibility to take on.
Yeah, it was. And first thing to say about Apple is there's lots of different security teams and there's lots of different efforts. And a lot of them don't even know about each other. And there's also a lot of secrecy there. So for any given program, the particular one that we were in, I mean, it always starts out with asking what you're trying to accomplish. That is like the most important thing. You have to know what your goals are. And then you essentially then ask, what is the work that you're doing? And what is the correlation between the work and the goals? And then you say, okay, and how are we actually doing at that? And it really starts with those high-level questions that kicks off a program like that.
So when you mentioned the secrecy and not really knowing what's going on in different programs, would you say that's pretty typical of such a large scale organization? Or was that maybe a little bit more specific to Apple as an organization?
Yeah, I think Apple is famous for their secrecy.
Yeah, fair enough. So I know I started off with a little bit of a tough question, but let's back up a little bit. Can you tell us just a little bit about your background, like maybe how you got started in IT in the first place?
Yeah, I was actually in university and I wanted to do pre-med, actually. And I was in computer labs at the campus and they were getting attacked. So like you would have to scoot over and use a different computer because like that one was all messed up with viruses or whatever. And I was like, what is going on here? And the administrator there for that lab was like, oh, we're getting hacked and there's all these worms flying around. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, and then it's like, what is a server? Okay, what's a client? What are these networking protocols? And then I went and did an MCSE at the time because I was just out of the military. And I did an MCSE and continued studying there at the college and eventually took over doing security for the whole university when that guy left.
And then fast forward to today, now you're a head of vulnerability management. What was the path to from doing what you just said there to becoming head of vulnerability management? Did you kind of spend a little bit more time on the security assessment side and realize that's what you really enjoyed doing and just kind of fell into it just like you fell into IT? Is that how that happened?
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of immediately. I knew that security was the thing. I kind of skipped IT and just went right into security. So I was defending that university. And then my first job out of school was a basic security engineer type of job. So it was like firewalls, intrusion detection, all that sort of stuff, and a little bit of assessment work. And I did that for about 2 years and I left to go do pen testing full time. And then did that for a number of years and then got into AppSec and then started doing a lot of consulting and then some leadership roles.
And so how would you describe, kind of fast forwarding to today now, what does your day-to-day look like on the job as head of vulnerability management?
So it comes down to figuring out how to ask the right questions of the program, specifically of like attack surface. So understanding what the current state of the attack surface is at all times, and what tools do you need to be able to ask those questions on a continuous basis? Because like you can't really do like a quarterly pen test or something like that anymore. You have to kind of always be scanning, always be looking, always be asking, and always collecting those results looking for bad things, right? If you ever see a configuration that looks like this, open a ticket. If you ever see a vulnerability that looks like this, open a ticket. And that's essentially starting the workflow of getting that thing fixed. So you're always finding things, you're always prioritizing those things, and then you're presenting those to various stakeholders to in a prioritized way that can help them get them fixed.
And because that's constantly needing to happen versus something that's just quarterly or even potentially yearly in some cases, I wonder if that's not where some of the confusion comes from when people talk about security assessments. And the reason I say that is because I often see a lot of confusion and debate in the community and blog posts, even on social media and other places. And also, frankly, sometimes I blur the lines too, right? But more specifically, I'm talking about the differences between, say, a vulnerability assessment versus a pen test versus bug bounties versus red team engagements. And I think people tend to merge them together, or at least some of them together, and then use some of those terms interchangeably. Or when they describe them, they may not describe them super clearly. But one of the reasons I was super excited to have you on the podcast is because I came across some of your blog posts and they provided some of the clearest explanations that I've ever seen on the topic. So I'd like to kind of break that down a little bit further as you do in the blog posts. Mm-hmm. And then also highly recommend that people go to your website, danielmiesler.com, to check out some of those articles. But how are they different, starting with vulnerability assessments? What does that term mean to you specifically?
Yeah, I appreciate the comments. So vulnerability assessment to me means finding all the issues that are present. And there are a few different ways to slice this. There's like what used to be called black box and white box testing. It's like, do you know what the assessment, do you know what the attack surface is? Do you know what the problems are? Do you have the ability to look at the code? Versus white box would be like, you have full access. And black box would be like, you don't have access. You have to pretend like you're an outsider. And people used to slice up security assessments in like these arbitrary sort of ways. But I think the cleanest way to look at it is a vulnerability assessment. You're trying to use any technique that you can, including knowing everything that you could possibly learn, like getting all the code, finding all the previous issues from previous assessments or whatever, looking at all of them and raising them all up and then prioritizing them for remediation. So that's using any technique you can to find all the issues and prioritize them.
So figuring out what the false positives are, if there are any false negatives that might have been missed, anything that hasn't been tackled in, say, a couple of years, but that's still there. But so it kind of sounds like from what you're saying, a vulnerability assessment is not just a vulnerability scan, right?
Well, so it usually is, and it has been traditionally. So vulnerability scanners traditionally, that's what it's been, right? You run the scan, you get the results. But no, it doesn't need to only be that. It could also be findings from an auditor. It could also be a pen tester finds things. The words start to, or the terms start to blur because of who's doing the work, right? So if you have a certain type of engagement, which is name something, it might be associated with the type of security assessment that it goes with, or it might not. So you might have like a pen tester who that's how they call themselves, and that's what their identity is, they're a pen tester. But they go in and the customer says, here's all our previous findings. Use anything you want. Use all of our tools. Use all of your tools. Here's the previous audit findings. Just tell us what we need to fix in what order. And I would say that engagement would be like a vulnerability assessment. Find everything you possibly can and tell us what we should fix first. So And that's the tricky part about this, right? Because if someone is like, well, pretend that you're an attacker, well, now that's a different type of assessment.
And so if you could have a vulnerability assessment, to your point, right, and you run those vulnerability scans and then you have all these results and you don't really know what to do with those results. So what if I correct me if I'm wrong, but what I heard you say is at that point, you could bring in a single pen tester or a pen testing firm and say, hey, we have all this stuff. We don't really know what to do with it. Can you please help us prioritize the actual issues and determine which ones are truly issues versus something that doesn't really need we don't need to spend time on? First of all, is that kind of summarizing what you were saying? And second of all, in that case, how would you describe pen tests as being separate from vulnerability assessments, if there is a separate type of engagement for that.
Yeah, I would say it's slightly different than that. I would say a vulnerability assessment, the goal is to find as many things as possible with any technique that you have and to prioritize them. So you wouldn't want to give someone an unprioritized list of findings for a vulnerability assessment. In my opinion, that would be a bad vulnerability assessment. Because the whole point of any of this is fixing stuff, right? So just finding stuff isn't super useful. I would say that a pen test could add to the list of findings, but ultimately your pen test is also going to result in a list of things and an adjustment to the priority in which you're trying to fix them. So it could be that you're sitting on 100 vulnerabilities or 100 problems, which you're trying to prioritize. Maybe a pen tester comes in, they haven't seen that report. They find two of the things that are already on the list, and they find something else that is not on the list. Well, those need to be slotted in with the things that need to be fixed. And the question is, where do they go? Is it so severe that it goes to the top of the list, or is it number 37 on the list? The most important thing is the prioritization, because that's what determines what you fix first.
And then on top of that, one of my personal favorites is, I'll kind of see this from time to time on Twitter, but there's the debate between bug bounties and penetration tests. And sometimes you'll have pen testers that come on and they say, you know, I don't believe in bug bounties. It's not necessarily a dumb concept. I don't want to misquote, but more so of just, you know, you put in all this effort, you're not getting paid for it. I kind of feel like that's bogus. I think pen tests are better, but according to your blog post, they shouldn't necessarily be treated the same way. Can you kind of elaborate a little bit more on how you view bug bounties separate from pen tests and when one can be more useful than another?
Yeah, I would say the main weakness of a pen test is that any tester sort of has their favorite brand of things to look for. They have one skill set, they have one tool set, and they have like a perspective on life, right? And they have life experience, and that goes into the methodology that they use to find issues. So if you're comparing not having a test at all versus running a scan is better. If you're comparing not having anything at all to running a pen test is better. And this is the same for any type of security assessment. But the trick is, a pen tester is likely to find the things that are right in their style, in their view, in their skill set. Bug bounty, one, it adds a financial incentive that you don't get from a pen test, because the pen tester gets paid regardless, right? If they find not too much or nothing, they get paid the same amount as if they find a million things. Bug bounty people get paid only if they find things. And that's a pretty powerful economic mechanism to produce more findings. The other thing that's even more important is it's lots of different people with lots of different skill sets and lots of different perspectives on testing. So they will just find more things. And I think that's been borne out through lots of data and lots of experience from most anyone. There are trade-offs in the sense that a pen test, you tend to have a more trusted person, at least in the past. And you know exactly what they're doing. Maybe they're on site. Maybe they're wearing a suit. They eat lunch in your cafeteria or whatever. Like there's a certain relationship about it. You have a relationship with this vendor versus you open up your program. Who are these people that are coming in and filing bugs? It's a little bit scary. But I think that's kind of going away. And I think we can more lucidly look at the advantages and disadvantages of both types of testing. And ultimately what this is coming down to is like, this is all merging. This is all just becoming different attributes or styles of testing. And it's all just, testing is more unified now than ever has been.
And then on top of that, again, to make the matters slightly more confusing here, we also have something called red team engagements, right? Which is considered separate from bug bounties, from pen tests, and strictly just vulnerability assessments. Can you explain in your own terms what you think of when you hear a red team engagement?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not looking at the write-up. I did a write-up on this that you referenced. But I think the short version of this, or maybe it's a medium version, who knows, we'll find out at the end. But it's something like this. A pen test, and some of this is history and some of this is philosophy and structure of like the test itself. So the history is essentially a pen tester is a short-term, or a pen test is a short-term engagement. They come on site, they're going to do 2 weeks, they're going to do 3 weeks, they're going to do 1 week, whatever it is. And it's one to a small number of people, often just one. And they come in, they do their tools with their skill set, they find the findings, they give you the report, and it's done. And I would say arguably pen testing should be goal-based, but it's not always. Sometimes a pen test actually turns into a vulnerability assessment with exploitation, which I talk about that in the piece as well. It's like one of the first things that I would always do is just like look around or maybe even scan some things, find some possible avenues, go after exploitation. But the goal was very specific. In my time when I was doing this, the goal was domain admin and to basically get full control of the whole system and then possibly go after some important assets. But that is kind of the main idea for red team or for pen test, is to have a goal-based system. You're time-boxed. You get your goal or you don't, or you find a bunch of vulnerabilities, which is more like a vulnerability assessment. But you give your report and you're done. And it's very time-boxed. Red team, I would say, it depends if you're a vendor and you're doing this, because then it could be like an engagement. But in my opinion, red team is more oriented towards an internal function or an external function that is continuous. Continuous is really important. The other piece of red team that's super critical is attacker emulation. And I think that is fundamentally different from pen tester as well. Pen tester goes in with the pen tester skill set and the pen tester's abilities and the pen tester's tools, because all they care about is the findings, right? Whereas a red team, in my opinion, should be more thinking about who is likely to attack us, using what kinds of tools, how can we emulate them, and then also how could we find other ways to maybe do their job better even than our attackers, but in a very continuous, slow and low, using attacker TTPs and basically perpetually test the org as if you were the enemy, which is quite different than a pen test in the sense that a pen test is like, blast everything you have, go as fast as you can. And oftentimes they try to be quiet, but oftentimes it's very quick because they're just trying to get to the report. Whereas a red team is like, we're going to be doing this perpetually. And if our tools get old, we'll write new tools or we'll buy new tools, because you're always fighting against the blue team. And you're trying, this is another core thing that I really believe about this, is the purpose of a red team is to make a blue team better, right? And that's why it's got to be continuous. The tools and techniques have to evolve. And ultimately, that information that the red team is finding should be going to the blue team to make them better, which of course makes the red team job harder, but that's part of the job.
And then you also have something that a lot of people mention too during red team engagements, which is the purple side or the purple team. How would you say that's different from both red team and blue team? Do you actually see that as separate individuals that help bridge the gap between the two? Or do you see that more as a concept of how engagements should be run in the first place?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's essentially, I see it as a function. It has been a team in the past, and it's fine if it needs to be for some period of time. I equate it to somewhat like a marriage counselor. So like, if you need someone to hire somebody to make it so that the husband and wife can speak to each other, that's fine if that's needed. But ideally it's not a good situation to be in. You want to have open communication between them. So it's like, if you need that for a short amount of time, fine. But ultimately what you're trying to get to is smooth communication between these two groups. So red team, there's a lot of history here, right? So the whole hacker scene, red team has a lot of the hacker scene in it. And unfortunately this, in some individuals, in some groups, comes with the baggage of not wanting to share. A lot of red team people and teams view themselves superior to the blue team folks, and they believe the blue team folks are basically security people, and they're not hackers. And why would I give you my cool stuff? And that is, it's a bad mentality. And what it leads to is they keep their secrets. They don't tell the blue team how to better defend themselves. And ultimately, they make the company less secure by doing so.
I love your marriage analogy. I'm going to have to borrow that one. That's a really good way to put it and to visualize it. So thank you for sharing that. Kind of as a follow-up, I know you mentioned that a lot of these start to merge together. So if we're thinking about it from the terms of an organization and they want to try and implement more of this, they want to try and increase their security maturity, how would you recommend that they do that? Should they think about vulnerability assessments, pen tests, and everything else we talked about sequentially, right? Like, hey, we're going to start with vulnerability assessments, then we're going to move on to this, then that, then that, then that? Or is it not so much clear cut and black and white?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would say the thing to think about is what are we fixing? Are we fixing things? That's really crucial, because I've been in so many places where either myself or another security tester produce a bunch of results, and I come back the next quarter, I come back the next year, nothing's been fixed, but they're super excited about doing this next test. And it's like, hold on, the point is not the test, the point is the remediation. So, and the prioritization of the stuff that we have so we can figure out what we need to fix first. So the question is, what kind of state are we in as a security group? And that determines what type of test we need. Also the type of thing that we're defending, lots of other factors. But let's say that you are taking over a new org, nothing is patched, it's all legacy gear, on-prem, whole bunch of Windows machines, nothing is patched or whatever. And you're like, oh, I saw this ad and there's some company that's charging $85,000, they're gonna do a red team assessment. And they're the most elite hackers in the whole world. Nope, not a good fix. Because ultimately what you could do is you could run a basic scanner and find, you know, a giant mountain of vulnerabilities which you need to fix. And that is kind of your most important thing. Now maybe you could do a pen test to demonstrate to management or decision makers that this is really serious if they don't want to spend money on this. And you could kind of use that as a lever. But you wouldn't be using it to find things to fix, because you already know what you need to fix, right? Because the thing about it is, you could have somebody look at a broken IT system or set of systems and say, you know, our problem is patching. And they learned that in about 11 seconds of being there. Then you hire this pen tester, they run their tools for 2 weeks and they come back and they're like, your problem is patching. And you hire the super, you hire this red team for $85,000, and they come back after 3 months and they're like, your problem is patching. Like, you already knew the problem was patching. So patch first. So the idea is you ratchet up these types of tests and the sophistication of these tests and use different durations and time windows and such as you need to find vulnerabilities that you're not seeing. So after you fix things or you're worried that you're not seeing certain things, and you feel safe when you shouldn't, that's when you do additional assessments. And bottom line is that if you're not fixing things, why are you continuing to look for new stuff?
I mean, I can relate though, because from my perspective, testing is so much more fun than fixing.
That's true.
I can definitely relate to that. Yep. But absolutely, very, very good point. So moving on a little bit, because I think this is going to be really relevant to people who are listening, especially if they're either just getting started in cybersecurity or they're very interested in what we're talking about today and they want to pursue that as a potential career path. And so you wrote a very detailed guide called How to Build a Cybersecurity Career. Again, highly recommend you check it out on his website. But let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about if somebody's listening right now and they want to follow your footsteps, they want to end up at that red team or as a pen tester, what would you say are some areas that those people can focus on in terms of learning to really break into this field or this area of interest?
Yeah, I'm going to come at this from a somewhat controversial standpoint, which is I would say being a tester of this type, it really is almost a personality type as opposed to a skill set. And of course, you need a skill set, but it's almost like if you do not have a passion or an inclination towards this type of work, then the training is not going to help you a tremendous amount. And if you are so inclined towards it, you might not need that much training. And it's both heartening and disheartening, because if you find yourself wanting to do the thing, but you're not a curious person, or you don't like the idea of coding, I do think coding is important. It's not super essential for the entry levels, but it does get more and more important the further you go. I'm talking about in testing specifically.
Mm-hmm.
You're not obsessed with understanding how things work. Curiosity, absolutely essential. Understanding how things work, wanting to understand the mechanisms behind things. If these things aren't like super attractive to you in a like almost undeniable way, then you could throw courses and courses and college degrees and advanced degrees, and you won't be able to be a good tester, in my opinion. And I've seen this so many times. I've seen people who have virtually no training, and they cannot stop themselves from trying to figure out how this thing works. And they become really quality hackers in like a year. And I've seen people do a master's degree, even a PhD, and just do every single security certification. They've done all the hacking courses, and they can't find a single issue. So I would say start with figuring out what you like to do in IT and in security, and ask yourself seriously, are you a curious person who likes to understand how things work? And does that drive you? And if it does, the path is fairly simple. There is so much good content online. And this is why someone can go from knowing nothing, being super curious, and becoming a hacker in like a year, is because of YouTube. I mean, YouTube is amazing. There's just so much content on there. There's so much free content on blogs. There are free courses you could take. There are free college courses that you could take in computer science. Like, the world is wide open for anyone who has this deep curiosity and sort of technical talent or skill. And the deep technical skill is not even as important as the curiosity, because the curiosity drives the skill set. And all I'm saying is, if you don't find computers interesting and that sort of thing, don't try to force yourself into an offensive security or security testing career, because one, it probably just won't interest you. And because of that, it probably won't be super successful.
That's such a good point. And from time to time, I'll get this DM that's like, hey, you know, I saw this being done in the movies. It looks super cool. It's glamorous. I want to do that too. Can you help me figure out how to get started and how to proceed? And the first thought in my head is like, well, if you're just basing this off of movies, probably not the best motivation. I mean, it can be in some cases, but meaning that that's not really a real representation of what the field is like. And so if you're not, to your point, self-motivated enough to kind of figure out that initial step, then I don't know that that's that interesting to you as a career or field. And so maybe you're just not going to enjoy it. And if you don't enjoy it, why would you even bother doing it, right? There are so many other things that could be far more enjoyable to do, and your job's going to be a huge portion of your life. So I hope you find something you actually like doing. And the best way to do that is to just kind of try it out and see if it's something where you just keep going back to it and back to it and back to it, and you just can't stop doing it. Or if you're just kind of like, hey, this is really cool, I want to do it, but I don't really care for it. I think those are definitely some serious considerations to think about as you pick your area of interest and this specifically. But are there maybe a couple of different project ideas that you can think of that would be a good way for somebody to learn, right? If they are trying to develop that skill set, but maybe they're a little bit intimidated with starting out with bug bounties, or they don't have that pen test experience, and so they're just kind of stuck. Are there some project ideas that you could reference for somebody to try out?
Yeah, I mean, there's some really good course material out there. Pentester Lab is a great one. I see people talking about that a lot. That is really good. I would say YouTube is really good. Follow people that you like to listen to explain things. Malware Tech, Jason Haddix, The Cyber Mentor, whole bunch of people out there producing great content. Stuck, NomSec. There's just so many great resources out there, people talking about this stuff. And if you can listen to them be excited about this stuff and you're not excited, that's the signal that you need. Like, this is not the thing for you. And the other thing I would say is try to learn how to build the things that you want to break. So maybe if you're just getting started out, build a website, right? Build a website, then take a tool and maybe try to scan the website and find the vulnerabilities. And since you built the thing, you'll know more about it. And so much of everything that we do in security, and especially security testing, it's all about finding the nooks and crannies and understanding, oh, because it was set up in this particular way, it's got this particular configuration, which is broken because of the history of this previous version or whatever. It's all about knowing the details. And there's no better way to learn the details than try to build something.
We're going to move on to, as we wrap up the episode, to what I call the quick fire round, which is just a series of really quick questions. Just give me some short answers on them. And starting out with, what are some of your favorite hobbies outside of work?
So I like table tennis. I like reading. I read. I haven't been on this pace for the last couple months, but I read between 4 and 6 books a month, which is it's crazy, crazy fast, but I really enjoy it. It's the main way that I stay thinking. So reading and writing are my main hobbies. I also play table tennis, which I've gotten more into since COVID has relaxed somewhat. And then I'm also getting into radio again, which I was deeply into when I was younger. And I'm going back into it with SDR. And I'm actually about to build a weather station in my backyard.
Nice. Yeah. No way. That sounds like a really fun project. And speaking of reading and writing, what's your favorite book right now?
My favorite book. Oh, goodness. So our book club right now is reading, what is it? The Three Body Problem. It's is like probably my favorite piece of science fiction, hard science fiction.
I'm not a huge science fiction fan for some reason. I need to try it again because it's been a while since I've picked one of those up and tried to read it. But yeah, that sounds like an interesting one. That might be a good one to start with. I'll check it out.
No, that would not be a good one to start with. I would recommend the book is called Project Hail Mary. There's no way you will read this book and not love science fiction.
Project Hail Mary. All right. You'd recommend that as a starting book?
Oh, no. Absolutely.
All right. That's a big claim. Okay. I'm going to have to follow back up.
I'm confident.
And see if I agree with that after reading it. All right. Fair enough. Last one. In your opinion, what is one area that we're missing the mark, either as organizations or as a society or whatever, in terms of cybersecurity?
Doing the fundamentals well and starting with fundamentals. And obviously, it's very, very easy to say that we should just do the basics well. But I think leaders do have the ability to say, look, stop, let's think before we act, and let's reorganize the actions that we're doing. And a good example of this is, say, make me a list of all the work that we're doing. You'd be surprised to know how many companies do not have a list of the work that they're doing. They also don't have a list of the goals that they have. They also don't have a list of the problems that they have. And in my mind, this is the single biggest problem that most companies have. And it's also on the business side, not just on the tech side or the security side. What are we trying to do? What are our challenges? And what should we do to make those things happen? And to get rid of those challenges? And it's simple, and it can be implemented in tech fairly easily as long as everyone's pushing in the right direction, and that's where the challenge is.
Yeah, I think we tend to get so caught up in the weeds and the day-to-day that sometimes we just kind of forget the very basics unless we're able to step back and take a breather and say, wow, how did we miss this for months or years? It seems so basic. We just totally missed it. So that's a good one. I appreciate that one, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And on the tech side, the greatest example of this is asset management. Do we have a list of everything we're defending?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a list most people can produce either.
No, definitely not. I've definitely witnessed that not being done. And if you bring somebody in and they ask that question, right, you can just see the blank stare on other people's faces. Yep. And that's usually a sign that you desperately need it, kind of like meditation, right? Like if you think you don't have enough time to meditate, you probably need meditation. But anyway, so Daniel, if people want to follow up, how can they connect with you and reach out?
DanielMiesler.com is good. And I'm also on Twitter.
Is it at Daniel Miesler? I can't remember.
That's it. Yep.
Okay, perfect. Daniel, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And thanks everybody for tuning in to this episode as well. Please do reach out to Daniel via his website and on Twitter, just to give him a big thank you for sharing with us on the podcast. But also, I've referenced a lot of material from his blog on this podcast episode. So it's definitely something I would recommend that you pull up and just kind of read through the articles and get more in depth, because we only have so much time on the podcast. So yeah, just reach out to him and thank him for his time. And one more thing he's got that I haven't mentioned yet is he also has his own podcast called Unsupervised Learning, which is definitely something else you can check out. So anyway, thank you all for tuning in today. Really appreciate it and can't wait to see you next time.
Thanks for having me.